Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for being with us for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly Chicago. I am Hub Arkish. What am I? I'm the editor and general manager, and I am joined by, I think I can say it on the air now, our new managing editor, Arthur Arkish, has received a bit of a promotion. Congratulations to you, Arthur, and I know everybody in the company is excited about it. We appreciate everybody joining us for the weekly podcast. Fortunately for all of us, Arthur doesn't get out of the podcast just because he's the managing editor now, and we are, as we are each week, brought to you by our friends at Loot Crate. Go to lootcrate.com. It's the best surprise you know is coming. And unfortunately, the Chicago Bears last week, Arthur, had no surprises for us. They once again played better than anybody expected them to until it came time to try and win a football game, and then they found a way to lose. And I'd like to say it was a new way to lose, but unfortunately it was a repeat of an old story. Many of us wondered why Connor Barth was still here. He's not still here anymore.
Yeah, you know, I guess I was at least surprised, Hub, that this team remembered what its offensive identity was supposed to be. You know, that was encouraging. I was not surprised, unfortunately, that the team can't seem to ever click all three phases at once, as you alluded to. Connor Barth, of course, misses the chance to tie it late, a very makeable 46-yard field goal right after Matt Prater, who is just unbelievable distance field goal kicker in crunch time, did it a couple minutes earlier from, I believe, 52 yards out. And what can you say? I suppose we have to mention John Fox's post-game comments that certainly kind of raise some eyebrows. And just where does this team go from here? Yes, of course, they go to Philadelphia Sunday, but bigger picture, I think it's actually crystallizing a little bit that where things go from here is likely another complete blow-up.
Well, yeah, and we're going to get to Fox in a second because it probably is the story of the week, but I just want to take a step back and be careful to point something out. Connor Barth is not responsible for the Bears losing that football game. If he makes the kick, all it does is get him to overtime, and the Lions are still the favorite. You got to have a kicker who can make that kick, and that's why Connor Barth needed to go. But there were a couple of interesting and exciting things. The Bears have really got something going here when they can put their starting offensive line on the field and put Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen behind them. I thought Adam Shaheen had, I don't want to call it a breakout game because he's still a ways off, but he took a huge step forward last week, and that's something that people have been waiting for. Defensively, Christian Jones, Nick Kwiatkowski played really good football. Kyle Fuller had a nice bounce-back game. He wasn't perfect, but he was a lot closer to the early-season Kyle Fuller. Akeem Hicks, you know, sometimes with Hicks and Goldman, you got to study the tape and see how much they're doing up front. They're not going to get sacks every week, but, you know, the defense played well except for one quarter, and that's where we start to segue to what went wrong on the coaching side. But even before that, Dowell Loggins had a better game.
No
doubt. He did the right things in the first half. Unfortunately, when it came crunch time, they still had the wrong personnel packages on the field. He got away from some of what he did well. But at least early on, we saw what can happen and what Mitch Trubisky may be able to do when plays are called in correct sequence and they open things up for him a little bit.
Absolutely. The loss certainly isn't on Connor Barth and Connor Barth alone, but it did certainly reinforce what we've talked about on this podcast. What anyone who watches football knows, if you're going to have a conservative method to try and win games and you're going to have a tiny margin for error, you need to have a kicker you can rely on more to make not quite chip shots, but kicks he's expected to make that can send a game into overtime. And the Bears obviously haven't had that. We'll see if Cairo Santos can be that. He was with the Chiefs, but it was health reasons that led to the butt kicker taking over and Santos becoming available to the Bears. As far as the game plan, it was a lot better, no doubt about it. And if we're going to be as hard as we were on Dowell last week, and we were, we needed to credit him. And they got Tariq Cohen reinserted into the offense. And they had a great 1-2 punch with Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen. They had Adam Shaheen, as you mentioned, he caught another touchdown. He had a big third down completion right before. Four, I don't remember if it was the series before on that same series in the red zone, and you're seeing the rapport build between Trubisky and Shaheen. Trubisky threw his rookie tight end open a couple times, the type of anticipation throws we haven't seen a lot of yet. So that was super exciting and and certainly timely, not only with, of course, Zach Miller being gone, but Deion Sims still out of the equation.
Yeah, you know, one of the tremendous advantages I have, or maybe it's just a perk and a benefit that I get, and I think a lot of our listeners are aware of this. If not, I do the 3-hour pregame show and 2.5-hour postgame show for all Bears games at 670 The Score. And in the morning, I get to work with Patrick Manley, one of the great special teamers of all time, and Dan Pompey, who, of course, has been on the NFL beat for 25 years. And then in postgame, I work with Olin Krutz and James Big Cat Williams. And so I watch every game with Olin and Cat. And you want to talk about what would I want to call it, a graduate studies, class in offensive line play and NFL play and toughness in general. It's sitting with Olin and Cat. And they've been pointing out to me over the last 3 or 4 weeks, Adam Shaheen's blocking has gotten better. He's not the best blocking in line tight end in the NFL, but he's been improving week to week, and it was the receiving game where he was coming slowly. And last week, he became a go-to guy for Mitch Trubisky. And I think what Bears fans need to get used to, because I've talked about this before, the baby Gronk stuff was stupid. He is not Rob Gronkowski. He is never going to be Rob Gronkowski. He is not that type of athletic freak. He's got a really good chance of being Heath Miller, and that's a really good thing because Heath Miller was a really critical part of 2 Steelers Super Bowl teams and the kind of tight end you need if you're going to run a ground-based offense. And that's the player that I thought he really started to emerge into on Sunday. He was there on key throws at the goal line and on third down when Trubisky needed him. His blocking's getting better, and he's going to become, I think, a 70-catch, 800-yard, 6-to-8 touchdown guy who you can count on the red zone on third down. And that was the step that I thought he took last Sunday.
Yeah, you know, again, we just haven't seen those tight window chances. Trubisky hasn't been taking them. And for him to drill that first throw on third down over a Pro Bowler in Glover Quinn and right into Shaheen's hands was really exciting. And then you saw Shaheen use the body, all 6'6", 270 of it, to get positioned on the touchdown, his second of the season. He's kind of the sort of Martavis Bryant, just in terms of his efficiency scoring touchdowns on the chances he's getting thus far. But we need to see him more involved. And Hub, I think you said we're going to kind of try and segue into Fox here, so maybe this is the right time. Shaheen wasn't on the field on the drive when the Bears needed, you know, more plays, obviously, to have a chance there late. Tariq Cohen wasn't on the field either. John Fox said, well, you'll note it was all veterans on the field who can operate in a no-huddle and have the football acumen to do that. And my response to that is that John Fox is 12-30 as the head coach of the Bears. We know that his age-old philosophy of trying not to lose games hasn't worked. So with his back against the wall, you'd like to think maybe he'd morph into a guy who's going to take some more risks, who's going to just have his best chances on the field of winning, or at least the way we perceive them, and clearly he still doesn't see it that way, and I'm deeply disturbed by that, his inability to kind of adjust when he needs to.
Well, let me just take a baby step back and then expand on your segue, if we can. You also didn't see Jordan Howard on the field, and Jordan Howard, particularly with Ezekiel Elliott gone, maybe the best running back in the NFL. He's certainly one of the top 4 or 5, off finishing second in the league rushing last year as a rookie, and clearly better this year, again, when he's got a reasonable game plan and his offensive line in front of him. He's not a rookie. And so if you want to use that excuse, you know, A, it's not a good excuse because at this point going into week 11, it's an age-old cliche in the NFL. Cohen and Shaheen aren't rookies anymore. You know,
right.
They basically had a full college season. But Jordan Howard is almost done with his second year. There's nothing he shouldn't know. I understand that Benny Cunningham is their, quote, third down back, 2-minute guy. And Benny Cunningham is fine. But Jordan Howard is the best weapon on that football team. And for him not to be out there in that 2-minute drill at the end, he gave you the option of running a draw. You had 2 timeouts in your pocket. They were playing for the field goal from the beginning instead of going for the touchdown. And when Connor Barth is your kicker, that was not the way to go.
Yeah.
And so now you get to the postgame comments, and part of it is that really unacceptable explanation. You've got to have your best offensive players on the field when it's crunch time. And the unfortunate, and listen, The irony of it is that he appears to be buying his own ticket out of town. Over the last couple weeks, I've become more fond of John Fox. I mean, he's not a bad guy. He is a good football coach, but I think that he has almost gotten worn down by the losing at this point, because he was trying probably to be clever when he talked about his team having playing, you know, good football games, except for the occasional lulls and siestas, is the quote. But that's the coach's fault if that happens. And that can't be happening 42 games into your, you know, tenure as the head coach of the football team.
It sounds, as you just said, maybe he's kind of resigned to his fate at this point. And thank you. That's a huge oversight on my behalf. Of course, Jordan Howard's absence on the field is inexplicable as any of those guys. But, yeah, you know, it is what it is. We got to just remind everyone, not that they need the reminding, but this isn't the Pittsburgh Steelers offensive personnel. This isn't the New England Patriots. The Bears can't afford to not have the best talents on the field in the biggest moments, and they don't see it that way. So,
I don't mean to interrupt, but it was worse than that. Dontrell Inman looks like a football player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm pretty sure. I got to double check this. I think he's a free agent after the season.
Yes,
but you got a guy that I would want to make a priority of trying to bring back. You know, he and Kevin White and Cam Meredith all seem to be kind of the same player.
Right.
You know, but having three number twos with the same body types isn't the worst thing in the world. Mm-hmm. It's a place to start. He wasn't on the field for three of the plays in the two-minute drill either. Now, their argument is going to be he's only been here 3 or 4 weeks. He's a four-year veteran. There's no excuse for that. And so it's just, you know, I don't want to harp on one coaching area where they let themselves, they didn't let anybody else down, they let themselves down last Sunday. But this is why, for me, because I really believed going into Green Bay, the second Green Bay game, I thought that Fox was on a 4 or 5 week run that might be saving his job for one more year.
We both said it on this podcast.
Yeah. And then they just absolutely crapped the bed against Green Bay. And everybody jumped on it. I said, no, that's a week too soon. You got to look at the last 4 weeks. Then they come back and do what I thought they were going to do, which is outplay Detroit for a good part of the game, but then find a way to lose. And some of the reasons for that loss are coaching related. And that's why this week to me may have become the week where it's now too hard to envision a scenario in which you talked about blowing it up. Ryan Pace, I don't believe, is in any jeopardy whatsoever. I believe he has the full faith and confidence of George McCaskey.
Should he?
Yes, I think he should, and we can get to that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But GMs, and particularly young GMs, almost always get a second crack at a head coach.
Right.
They don't get blown up as quickly as coaches do. And I want to let you set it up. But yeah, I believe I see more that I like from Ryan Pace than what I don't like. Although, unfortunately, Connor Barth is completely on him. And Connor Barth shouldn't have been here this season, mm-hmm. let alone last week. They did bring in Robert Aguayo, to their credit. They should have brought in more. They should have gone to camp with competition for him that was meaningful, and they didn't do that. So that's a failure. But I think there's a whole bunch of good stuff there, too.
Yeah, I do, too. And I think Pace is going to get an opportunity to hire a second coach. I'm with you on it looking at this point like an imminent change is happening as far as John Fox is concerned and probably much of his staff. For Pace, for me, it's really simple. I think the draft has been largely encouraging. The injuries he can't control. Kevin White, obviously, that's out of his control. But I think pro personnel has been pretty bad. Outside of Akeem Hicks, there have been a lot more misses in free agency than there have been hits. And I know that might be simplifying it too much, but I think he needs to do better in free agency and in trades and on the pro personnel side. And I think for the most part, he needs to just keep doing what he's doing on the college side. But I don't think that the Bears sort of embolden their young general manager to go out and make that move for a quarterback and then fire him 6 months later. That doesn't make sense. And there have been rumblings all along that maybe John Fox wasn't Ryan Pace's first choice. So I also don't think it would make sense to saddle him with a guy who was or wasn't his guy, an old school coach, and then knock him a chance to go hire the young up-and-comer to get the best out of Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, I'm not sure what we can really say about trades. You know,
I really mean more free agency.
Yeah.
I just mean pro personnel.
Well,
Mike Lennon.
I think you have to go there because I've been outspoken. I hated trading up for Trubisky. They didn't have to do that. That was a mistake. They could have saved two number threes and a four and taken Trubisky at number three.
They got one of them back, but it was rich.
I'm as close to well, they got a four back, mm-hmm. and they gave up two threes. You know, so but I'm about as close to positive on that as I can be. But that said, you know, you get Dontrell Inman for a seventh-round pick. That's not looking all that bad, you know. So let's the trades we'll let sit for a while. The other thing, I don't think he's getting a fair shake on free agency because Akeem Hicks is likely to go to a Pro Bowl this year.
Oh, yeah.
I think Danny Trevathan has been an outstanding signing. You know, I like what he did this year with Amu Kamara.
Trevathan's missed more games than he's played in, though. I mean,
but you can't predict injuries. I'm sorry. I am never going to go after a GM or a coach for injury. Now, unless they come with a history. The big mistake to me was Pernell McPhee.
Yeah.
Because everything I heard the day they signed him was that the only reason he got out of Baltimore is because his knees were a medical reject.
Right.
So that one, I'll fault the injuries. But when you get a guy healthy and he gets hurt, I don't blame him for Kevin White. There was no way to predict what was going to happen to Kevin White. You know, Sam Acho, nobody talks about. This guy is going into his third year of being a really productive player who was an afterthought. So, you know, Antrell Roll was awful. I hated the Quinton Demp signing.
His three biggest free agent signings this offseason have all been flops, and Mike Glennon, Marcus Cooper, and Marcus Wheaton.
All right, but again, Wheaton and Cooper are injuries. Now, Wheaton may have been predictable. Cooper was off the field.
Wheaton was predictable.
Yeah, Wheaton was predictable. Yeah. I'm giving you that one.
Yep.
I'm not writing off Cooper yet. I think Cooper's a pretty good football player. And I'm anxious to see. Now, they gave him a lot of money. Remember, that's a multi-year deal.
Right.
So I think it's too early on Cooper. Amu Kamara was a one-year deal.
You gave Deion Sims $10 million guaranteed?
I wasn't wild about that. But again, he hasn't been bad.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is a John Fox puzzle. I understand that his personal health, you know, we are all entitled to privacy in our medical decisions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different thing with players. I can't fault Fox for this one, but I'd sure like to know what the illness is that's kept him away for these last couple weeks.
Right.
I think it's too early on that one. So, I'm not saying he's been great in free agency, but the one that Mike Glennon, he covered his butt on that. Mike Glennon is cheap after this year. He was always a one-year move. They knew they were drafting Trubisky, and he missed on Glennon. I'm not defending the pick by any means.
Right.
But I talked to a lot of smart football people who wanted to take a chance on Glennon, and I thought the way they set up that contract, he's got to get some credit for that if you're going to fault him for bringing him in. Also, people forget that Mike Glennon probably has Atlanta beat if Jordan Howard doesn't drop a ball at the goal line and if Josh Bellamy doesn't drop a ball in the end zone, and Mike Glennon beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. So he had the awful game against the Packers, and that's all anybody
and
remembers
Tampa Bay.
About Mike Glennon.
Awful game against the Bucs.
Yeah, but he didn't cost
Tampa.
Him that game. The whole team sucked against Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm not defending Glennon, but the key here is we're talking about Ryan Pace.
Mm-hmm.
And so nobody's pretending he's perfect. I'm not giving him an A or a B+, but I've seen enough encouraging things that I want to see more from him, and that's why I think the defining factor, the defining move in the Ryan Pace regime is going to be who he almost certainly replaces John Fox with.
Yeah, we're in agreement on that, no doubt about it. So we'll see. And I think a way to spin it forward, and we should mention this, Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, Tease Hub. I'm Arthur. We got Dan Mott producing. We got Eric Edholm in the next room over. We're going to take the Pro Football Weekly podcast after this. Check us out on iTunes. Subscribe, rate, review all of our Pro Football Weekly podcasts. We have four of them. And check out our great sponsor, Loot Crate, at lootcrate.com. It's the best surprise you know is coming. And Hub, before we talk about the Eagles for a moment, we should just mention it's fluid. But the last we had heard, we're taping here on Wednesday, and what we had heard on Monday was that the Bears were very cautiously optimistic. Is that a fair way to put it on Leonard Floyd? I mean, it was the biggest news in the game. Of course, he leaves on the stretcher. It was friendly fire with Kyle Fuller. Fuller hurt his hand but got back in the game. The Leonard Floyd injury looked really scary at the time, and John Fox said very early preliminary results are that his ACL is intact. We're going to find out more today, but we had to work that into the podcast.
Yeah, I love the fact that you get a half-hour rehearsal and Edholm gets a half-hour bullpen session before you do the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I'm just kidding around. I was in the room, and actually it's ironic. Fox was kind of staring at me because I was sitting next to Patrick Finley of the Sun-Times when the question was asked, and it's been reported rather poorly, unfortunately. We have a fair number of radio and TV reporters who are very good at their jobs but are not in the room when these things happen.
Right.
And what John Fox said about Leonard Floyd, and he was wording it very carefully, was that the tests so far had not revealed an ACL tear, but there were more tests to do. And just to be real specific with everybody, we throw this podcast together for you right before we go back out on Wednesday or Thursday. The Bears have been off on Tuesday. So I don't know, you know, the way Fox treats injury information, we may never get anything definitive, but it could very well change an hour or two after we've put this together. But what Fox said was that he felt good talking at 1:30 on Monday afternoon. The tests so far mm-hmm. had not revealed an ACL tear, but there was going to be more testing. And so the solid hope with some reason for optimism is that they dodged a bullet. But I think it's important to be real clear in how we report that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And we'll all hope for the best for Leonard Floyd. It has been a big-time second-year breakout for him. He's been better than his numbers even prove out, and those were coming on in recent weeks too. So one of my favorite parts of what the Eagles did this offseason, of course, the Bears will go to Philadelphia on Sunday to visit the, what are they, 9-1 now, the Eagles, yes. The best team in the NFL. So Howie Roseman, everyone's screaming from the mountaintops that he needs to build a run game for Carson Wentz in year two because they had nothing last year. It was one of the worst in football. And Howie Roseman decides to wait until June and sign LeGarrette Blount. He waits until October and trades for Jay Ajayi. He's got either the number one, number two, number three run game in the NFL. And what he did instead in the draft with that premium pick is he tapped into a deep pass rush group and he gets Derek Barnett, who had his breakout game last week. I think it's just an interesting segue because we were just talking about Leonard Floyd. This is their young stud pass rusher. He won't be the top concern for the Bears and Kyle Long and Charles Leno and the rest of the crew. That's going to be Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox and Jim Schwartz's scheme. But it just, to me, it showed the forward thinking that we've seen from this front office, from this Eagles rebuild. You can go back to the trade for Carson Wentz. You can go back to kind of signing several wide receivers and Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith to kind of build around Carson Wentz. I'm so impressed with the vision there and some of the shrewd moves that Howie Roseman has made and kind of cleaning up the mess he inherited from Chip Kelly.
Yeah, Howie Roseman is already a lock for Executive of the Year.
I don't know. I read that elsewhere too, but I think the Saints cannot be ruled out with Marshon Lattimore, with Alvin Kamara, and with Ryan Ramczyk. We'll see. And I don't know who you'd give it to, and Eric could weigh on this. I think it'd be more Jeff Ireland than Mickey Loomis, but I can't say the Eagles have been markedly better than the Saints building this
offseason. I'm not going to say markedly better, but I will say they've done more and they have a better record. And so, sure. We'll see where this ends up. Not important to be a lock. He's had an outstanding season. But what I was going at when we start making comparisons to the Bears and Ryan Pace is I think you got to be careful with one thing, which is he took over last year. His first huge move was the trade to get Carson Wentz. It looked risky at the time.
Right.
More than half of the foundation of this team was there when he took over. I mean, almost the whole offensive line. Nelson Aguilar was already there. On defense, Derek Barnett's a nice add, but all the rest of that front was there. Before Jordan Hicks went down, the linebacker group was there. Half the secondary was there. He had a ton to work with. I mean, he did a nice job of adding critical pieces and rebuilding, but he did not have the complete rebuilding job that Ryan Pace has to do. So that's just the one place where I want to be careful, because there are some other obvious comparisons, which is that Carson Wentz is a number two overall and Mitch Trubisky is number two overall.
Yep.
The other things that the Bears will have to do. I mean, I thought one of the sharpest things that he did was get Alshon Jeffrey on a one-year deal.
Right.
Nobody saw that coming. Now, the Bears, there's no way they should have franchised him again, and there's no way they should have given him number one receiver money, because while Alshon Jeffrey has probably had his best three-week stretch in the last 3 years, in the last 3 weeks, he hasn't been a number one receiver for them all year. He's not putting up those numbers. There's no way you can justify the contract that he wants yet.
Right.
But he was perfect for what Carson Wentz needed. And don't forget, they also added Torrey Smith. And then, as you point out, the running backs that they plugged in and the way they plugged them in. So I think there is a ton that Ryan Pace can learn from what Howie Roseman's done in the last 2 years. But it's not necessarily apples and apples, I guess, is all I'm trying to say.
No doubt. And the Eagles, we should add, were perfect for Alshon Jeffrey, because they were going to go with the volume approach to rebuilding the pass catchers. It took the pressure off of Alshon that he kind of succumbed to without Brandon Marshall, I think, as a true number one, because the Eagles knew they had Zach Ertz getting ready to break out. Like we said, Torrey Smith. I don't know about Nelson Aguilar if they saw that coming all along, but he's turned into a darn good inside NFL receiver all of a sudden after it looked like he was about to bottom out. So I think with only a couple minutes left in the Pro Football League Chicago podcast, I think that's the most interesting part, in my opinion, for Bears fans this week, is looking at A, Carson Wentz's supporting cast on the field, and B, call it 1B, if you will, the guys who are overseeing his development, and maybe literally someone that could be on the Bears' radar, a couple guys in Frank Reich and John DeFilippo, because that's where we know this thing needs to go next to maximize Mitch Trubisky and some of this young talent that's starting to be assembled.
I think the more interesting comp for the Bears right now in terms of what could happen next is the Rams and the Eagles. And I wrote about this a week or two ago in our Pro Football Weekly insert that you can get in newspapers all over the state. Because, you know, now you'll have Trubisky going into his second season. He will have struggled with Fox and Loggins in some respects in the same way that Jared Goff struggled with an almost identical coaching staff last year. Jeff Fisher, exact same kind of head coach as John Fox. You had Rob Boris, former Bears tight end coach, running the offense. And of course, Mike Groh, former Bears wide receiver coach, as the passing game coordinator. I like Groh. I still think he's going to be pretty good. But
he's
Boris,
in Philly now, we should add wide receivers.
And so what did they do? They blew up the coaching staff. They went young, energetic, offensive minds in bringing in Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur, you know, and look how that team has taken off. And I think even the Rams defense, there's some comps with the Bears defense with some of the young studs there that you can build around. And you look at where the Rams are at right now. So if Pace gets this right, it could be good for the Bears sooner rather than later. And then you point out the Eagles, they did last year what the Rams did this year. They brought in Doug Peterson. They had Frank Reich there. You talk about DeFilippo. These guys a little more veteran in what they've done, but it was the same concept. And so, yeah, in that respect, you know, maybe you're looking at what could be a mirror when you look at this team on Sunday.
And these moves, Hub, were not without risk. Sean McVay, 31 years old, obviously youngest coach in football. Everyone knows that. Doug Peterson had never called plays. That's always a risk when you're going to tab an offensive coordinator. I mean, he was learning under the great Andy Reid, but Reid is a master play caller, and Peterson had never done it. And I just wanted to add quickly, you know who else is in working with the Rams and Jared Goff is Greg Olsen. So if you're going to go get all the young guys, it doesn't mean you can't get someone older. And of course, Wade Phillips is on the other side of the football. I just love the dynamic of building the young and old. And Jim Schwartz, a former head coach in Philadelphia.
I know Greg pretty well. He was just getting a start here with the Bears when I was still in the broadcast booth there. And he's been around. He's had some real successes elsewhere. He's had a few that didn't work out so well elsewhere. But what's interesting about Greg is that he is the quarterback coach there working with Goff.
Yep.
And you've got LaFleur as the offensive coordinator. Depending on the staff you put together, if you want to think about Greg Olsen as an offensive coordinator, that's a step up. You can't get somebody else's offensive coordinator to go sideways. There is one issue with what the Bears are going to have to do that's going to be a little tougher. What the Rams did that was so smart, and we are going to have to say goodbye in a minute, is they went with McVay, but then they went out and got a really solid comp to Vic Fangio and Wade Wilson to come in and run the defense.
Mm-hmm.
Eagles did the same. Jim Schwartz, highly accomplished, a little riskier than Wade Wilson, but that's where a lot of their success is coming from. The Bears are at tremendous risk of losing Vic Fangio, whose contract is up at the end of this year.
Right.
If he doesn't get the head job, I think they'd be hard-pressed to get him to come back as the defense. You don't know. You know, I mean, depends on what else is out there. But that could be a little trickier for the Bears, and that is something that should be focused on the next few weeks, because I think Vic Fangio is the answer for this team. He's done a great job with this defense. And then one other thing, Arthur, I'll let you comment on that and this, and then we're going to have to say goodbye. The one issue that the Bears have got to find some answers for during the offseason, and this can be a little frustrating, and this is as much on Ryan Pace, maybe more so, as it is on John Fox. Injuries around the NFL are a problem. There's no question about that. And you can't predict them, and nobody has the answers. But there is no team in the NFL that has suffered as seriously from injuries in each of the last three seasons as the Chicago Bears have. I mean, you look at what happened to them the last year under Trestman, people forget, but then especially last year, just a disaster. Led the league in player, tied, I think, with the Pats for
Chargers,
players on IR.
Right.
But they lost more starters games to injury than any team in the NFL, and they're on track to compete for it again this year. They got to dig deeper. And what's frustrating is Ryan Pace and John Fox talked about how that was a focus of last offseason. They got to go back in there. They got to find some answers, because you can't get rid of all of them, but you got to do better than they're doing.
Yeah, no doubt. And we do, since we last talked to you guys on the podcast, the Bears did announce a massive overhaul at Halas Hall that I believe is going to certainly benefit the training facilities as well. And maybe that's kind of part of their vision to try and turn their injury luck around. But yeah, there's no question that I don't know how they do it. That's going to be Ryan Pace's job, presumably, to try and figure out where they've gone wrong these past couple years. and get it corrected, because, like you said, it's not conducive, obviously, to getting to where they want to go.
The Bears had a similar problem at the beginning of the aughts. And for those of you who aren't sure what the aughts is, I tried to figure out for like 5-6 years what the first decade of the 21st century was called, because it's not the 90s, the 80s, and the 70s. And I was told it's called the aughts until we get to the teens.
The more
which
you
we're
know.
In now. Yeah. So, but back in 03, 04, they were having similar problems. And they went out and hired a guy away from the Buffalo Bills named Rusty Jones. And I got a call from an old friend, Scott Bechtold, who at the time was running the communications department of the Bills. He's from Central Illinois. He's still with Buffalo, but in a different job now. And he said, "You guys just got the best strength and conditioning coach in the NFL." And I'm thinking to myself, boy, you know, how much of a difference can it make? From the time Rusty got here until the time he left, the Bears were the healthiest team in the National Football League. You talk to guys who played for him, they all swear by him. There are guys out there who can make it. And I'm not criticizing the guys the Bears have now. I'm not blaming them. I'm just making the point that there are guys out there who can make a difference. And it is one other thing that Ryan Pace is going to have to focus on.
Absolutely. We're about out of time, guys, but we do need to make some picks. We didn't spend a ton of time previewing this game because, frankly, it's one of the big mismatches of the NFL season. The Eagles are rolling. They've scored 30 points in four straight games. They've got Carson Wentz, the frontrunner, to win MVP. They've got, I think, probably the most, I don't even know if it's fair to call it underrated at this point, but the defense is fabulous. Just got Ronald Darby back in the secondary to pair with that awesome front seven. So there are endless challenges for the Bears to remain competitive, much less win on Sunday. Hub, how do you see it playing out?
Well, I'm going to let you go first because I have an interesting thought on this one, and then I'll put a wrap on it for us. But let me throw it right back at you. You going to pick the upset?
No. Well, if the upset is picking the Bears to cover, then no.
What's the spread? I don't even know.
I think it's at about 2 touchdowns right now. I think it was 13.5 last time I saw it. And again, I'm not picking them to cover. I am picking the Bears to hold the Eagles under 30, which no team has done in a month. I'm going to say 28-13. It doesn't mean I'm not encouraged, guys. I was encouraged by a lot of what I saw from Mitch Trubisky last week, and particularly Dowell Loggins in that run game. But the Philadelphia Eagles are not the Detroit Lions, and going to the link, they're just up against it, and I think it's probably going to be kind of ugly.
All right, so listen. Any given Sunday is a real thing. Yep. We know that. Stranger things have happened. That's a hot TV show, I think, without the happened.
It's really
good. The bottom line here, guys, I'm going to say the same thing I said last week. If Danny Trevathan goes, and I have no idea as we're doing this if he can. I'm not optimistic about it. But if Danny Trevathan goes, you saw the Washington, not Washington, but you saw the New Orleans Saints have a letdown last week and barely got away with it. You saw the Rams, who've been hot, not play well. You can't do what the Eagles are doing week in and week out. Eventually, you have a bit of a letdown. It doesn't mean they're going to lose, but they can't be this good every week. And when you see a team like the Bears coming, you know, it's a natural thing not to be as prepared. So if Trevathan goes and if the Eagles don't play their game, I still don't think the Bears can win, but they could keep it close. They might be, you know, within a touchdown or a score going into the fourth quarter. So I don't have a score. I don't know. The Eagles' defense is too good. But what I'm going to say is that if Trevathan plays, I think the Bears keep it under 10. If Trevathan doesn't play, I think the Bears probably get beat by 3 touchdowns.
All right, that makes sense to me. You guys heard it here first. Hub's predicting the ups. No, I'm just kidding. But as much as you're watching the game, guys, I think we've hammered it home enough. Watch kind of how the Eagles are being run. Watch what's around Carson Wentz.
Watch the play calling. Watch the sequencing that they do.
Yes, and you're going to kind of get a glimpse into hopefully what is going to be a really bright future for these Bears. So we should also add, of course, we hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving, everyone. I'll throw it back to Hub here, but a happy, healthy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Enjoy the weekend. Slate, and we'll be back with you next week on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast.
Yeah, and in case you're listening after Thursday, we hope it's a great holiday weekend. Hopefully the trip to Fane didn't put you on a siesta like it did John Fox's Bears last week. We do appreciate you guys tuning in. Don't forget Loot Crate, the best surprise you know is coming. Go to lootcrate.com. Be sure and go to iTunes and subscribe to our podcasts, and if you want to give us a review, we certainly wouldn't mind that. We'd like it to be a good review, but whatever you want. We're not going to try and tell you what to say. And we will now say goodbye and look forward to visiting with you again next week right here on Pro Football Weekly Chicago.